Welcome to the Travel Tales Podcast. The winners are the people with the most stories.
One of the great things about traveling is the people that you meet.
I've slept in bus stations, I've slept on people's floors.
And it's already on fire, and then there's just a gigantic, huge explosion, like out of a Hollywood movie.
It's not right or wrong, it's just different.
We hired like 10 Chinese prostitutes to come be our audience.
We were kidnapped by nuns in Puerto Rico.
Not a good idea to be high when you're packing. You forget a lot of stuff.
I got swine flu.
By the time you've lived through it, it's just a good story.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Travel Tales Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Siegel. Thanks for listening. My guest today is Laura Hayden. And before we get to Laura, here's a few announcements. Our website is traveltalespodcast.com. And there you'll find photos of our guests and some stories that I've written, some stories that the guests have written. There's links to their social media. There's links to our social media, which is Travel Tales Podcast on Instagram, Travel Tales Pod on X. We have a Facebook page. Follow us on all those platforms. And while you're at it, why don't you go ahead and subscribe on iHeartRadio or wherever you stream this. I never ask you for money, but I do ask you for some support. And maybe you give us a good rating, maybe give us some 5 stars or a thumbs up or whatever you got to do there. Just leave a review and tell the world how awesome you think we are over here at the Travel Tales Podcast, because that boosts our presence and helps more people find the show. So if you can do that, I would appreciate it. If you think you'd be right for the show, or you know somebody who might be right for the show, or maybe you want to ask me some travel questions, or maybe just tell me how awesome I am, you can write me at traveltalespodcast@gmail.com. That's traveltalespodcast@gmail.com. Okay, Laura Hayden is a comedian that I've worked with a number of times around Los Angeles. And we'd only really met casually, but I hadn't known her travel background. I hadn't known much of her personal history until this interview. And I was so glad that she did it, because she has been to many places around the world, not only doing comedy, but traveling on her own. I follow her on social media and I started to notice she was getting around quite a bit, whether it was Costa Rica or somewhere in Europe. And recently she was just in Japan, where I'm headed next month, and I'm so excited. So we had a lot of Japan talk on here. Japan, a hot place, because I've noticed a lot of friends of mine on social media and a lot of former guests of this show are all in Japan at the same time. I think they were like me, because Japan really shut down over COVID for years, and now they're back open, and a lot of people who had trips planned are all taking their trips now, because we can't wait to get back. So I'm looking forward to it. Going to be there April 14th through 24th, and we'll have lots to talk about when I get back. So a lot of Japan talk on here. If you want to get all the scoop on Laura Hayden, you can go to laurahayden.com, and there you'll find links to her socials, and you can follow her on everywhere from Instagram to TikTok and everything else. She posts a lot of cool stuff, and it was great to learn more of her story. Very nice of her to come down here to the garage studio and sit down in person. Always love doing in-person interviews. So much better than Zoom. This is a little bit of a longer interview than we usually post, but hey, she had a lot to talk about, and I wanted to listen. So it flew by for me, and I hope it does for you. Please enjoy my conversation with Laura Hayden. So you're doing physical therapy during the day,
uh-huh.
Comedy at night.
Correct.
When did the comedy start?
Oh, man. I'll make a long story as short as possible.
Okay.
I am not a natural extrovert. I am an introvert 100%, which most comics are, actually. But I am not. I'm like pathological. If I'd been in school now, they would have put me in therapy for how shy I was. Like, I was calculated about like not talking in class. I would suddenly be ill on the day that you had to give presentations and things.
Oh, no.
But yeah, no, terrified of public speaking and talking out loud and any kind of thing like that. So I grew up that way. My mom was extremely introverted and shy as well. And I saw how that limited her life, because she was really quite brilliant and she was too afraid to do anything. So when I finished school, I was like, I'm not going to be this person. So I purposely took a ton of speech courses, even though I would blush and I was terrified and I would do it anyhow, because I didn't want my life to be limited. And then I motivated my money. So I started waiting tables, because you make more money waiting tables in college than you do filing, you know, filing shoes or whatever, yeah, which is what I did,
that
actually.
Or exotic dancing.
Or warehouse, yeah. There's no way I was doing that.
For an introvert, still, that's not the best
game. Yeah, I still have a thing with public nudity. Korean spas and I are not friends. I've been to them, but I don't like it. I grew up in a household where we didn't do nudity. Anyhow, so I waited tables forever because I went to school forever because I started out as an art major and long story. But anyhow, I went to school forever, waited tables forever. All my regular customers were like, oh my God, you're so funny. I'm like, yeah, what do you want? And they're like, no, you're really funny. I'm like, no, what do you want? And they're like, no, what do you want? And they're like, no, you're funny. You make a good stand up, whatever. And then I got married like at 12, like I told you.
Yeah.
And my husband was like, oh my God, you're really funny. And I'm like, yeah, whatever. What do you want? And he's like, no, you're really funny. You make a good stand up. I'm like, whatever. What do you want? And he goes, anyhow. Graduate school, first time for my master's, not the doctorate. We had to give an enormous amount of presentations because they wanted us to be very comfortable talking to people and being very free and easy to communicate. So every class we had to give presentations, and my classmates were always excited because I would make it hilarious. And they were like, I said I'm talking about spinal meningitis or geriatric rehab. Or they're like, oh, you'll make it funny. So they nominated me to give the commencement speech, which I was terrified, threw up twice beforehand, but I still want to do it because it's notoriously a boring speech. As
to the whole school?
Yeah, so like 1,000 people graduate school.
Oh, my gosh.
You don't want to suck, but you know, I was still terrified. But I still wanted to do it because I'm an idiot. So afterwards, people are like, oh my God, you're hilarious. You're natural up there. I'm like, yeah, whatever. And so
what
I've been
do you
hearing
want? That's what you said.
I had heard this for a good decade, and I was like, so every New Year's, instead of pretending to give up something, I try something because I never managed to stop eating, drinking, or swearing. So I try something new. 20 years, I flipped a coin, heads came up. I expected to do the showcase at the Irvine Improv with Jeff Jennett, if you know him.
Yeah,
I did the showcase with him. I expected to do it, move on with my life, prove to my husband I wasn't funny, and go on about my way. But there's no 12-step program for comics, so once you start, you can't stop. And plus, it's led to the most magical, amazing journey of my life, and it's allowed me to go to like 40 something countries and meet amazing people and do amazing things. So it was a magical mystery tour I didn't know I wanted in my life, but here it is, starting of your travel podcast.
Yeah.
Comedy let me travel the world.
Well, I know we met doing stand-up around here, but you know, I follow you on Facebook and everything, and all of a sudden you're posting stuff from, you were just in Japan.
Correct.
And you were, I think you were in Costa Rica recently.
Yes.
And where were some of the other places you've
been? I was in last year. I'm horrible at remembering where I've been. People are like, weren't you in Spain? I'm like, oh yeah, I was. I was in Spain in July, Costa Rica in December. In May, I might have been in Costa Rica again. I was just in Japan. I'm going to Belize next week.
Were you doing stand-up in all these places, or was some of it pleasure?
I pretty much always do stand-up anywhere I go. It's part of like, I throw in a token show somewhere.
Yeah.
I think I was in Paris.
We write it off.
I think I was in Paris. Well, you know, you can't write all of it off. I've tried.
Oh, yeah.
My account was like, really? This whole trip to Japan was
for that one night gig? Yeah. Yeah. Okay, sure.
You did two gigs and you were there 12 days? Really? You think you could get away with that?
Two 10-minute sets? Sure. All right.
I think I was in Paris last March. Maybe. Yeah. So, no. I was in Italy. Sorry. Paris was the fall before, but.
So pre-stand-up, how much traveling have you done? Like, had you left the country much, or were you just like...
No, not really. And I always wanted to, but I was in school forever. I told you, I was in school forever. But stand-up really expanded that a lot. And I had, you know, Mexico, I think, pre-stand-up, Mexico... Maybe
for Californians, Canada? we don't count Mexico for.
I know.
You're a native.
They were like, "When did you first leave the country?" And I was like,
"Well, I drove an hour and a half to past San Diego."
But I had before I went to. I had started stand up before I made it to Europe, and the first time I went to Europe was not for stand up. But I've been there embarrassing. All many people were like, "Well, how many times you've been to Paris?" I'm like, over 10, less than 50? I don't know. They're like, are you showing off now? And I'm like, not trying.
I never did a set in Paris. The only ones I did in Europe, I actually did a set in Berlin.
Okay, Berlin's one place I haven't done comedy.
Really?
I'm hoping this fall, actually.
It was like an English comedy night that
I know
this comic Avi Lieberman, who has done the show.
Yeah, I know Avi.
Set it up.
Yeah.
So he was like, oh, if you're going there, there's this guy who runs a...
Yeah,
Or this woman, I can't remember. It was a woman. She ran this comedy night, English comedy night, and it was great. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I haven't done it as many countries as you have. Been to a lot of countries, but I just, I don't always do stand-up. A lot of times it's a break from stand-up.
Yeah, well, you know, you do one night, whatever. I try not to do more than a couple of nights because I'm like, I really, you know, I work pretty hard during the day and I get tired of me talking.
I get it.
Always kind of a challenge now. I think what started it kind of is I did Edinburgh 10 years in a row, the Fringe Festival.
Yeah. You were performing at it.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Like a one woman show or?
First time I did a one woman show and then, after that, I got hired to Compere, which is what hosting.
MC, yeah.
Yeah, they're fencing in for MC, the show. There was a variety show that ran for 2 hours. And I,
2 hours.
I know, and it had everything on it. I mean, any kind of performance art you can imagine. I'm just like, for me, if I see one more rope magician, I'm going to just slip my wrist. Yeah. I'm like, oh, not another rope trick.
Then stay off the cruises, I can tell you that much.
Kill myself.
And it's always the same trick.
It's always the same trick. You know, I think I could do it in a pinch if we had to. I'm like, I think I know how this happens here. So, I saw everything, every kind of performance art you can possibly. And so I did that for 2 years, and then I took a variety comedy show, like not a variety, but just like a mix of comics. I had like, I called it Comedy and Cupcakes, which I did here, and I ran a show there for 2 years. And then I went back a few times and did what they called gypsy comedy, where you just jump up on other people's shows. So,
well, this is what I've heard about Edinburgh from people who've done it. And they say it's a great experience, but they don't want to go back because a lot of them lose money.
You will totally lose money, no matter who you are. Unless you're selling out like their biggest arena, you're going to lose money.
Well, there's 1,000 shows going on every night, and how do you get people into your show? It's so hard.
Offer baked goods. My show, I'm not kidding. Comedy and Cupcakes was sold, like it was a free show, so it wasn't sold out, but they passed the bucket, and they're pretty generous, to be honest. So it was a small venue. It was only supposed to hold like 25, but I would get as many as 50 jammed in there. Sometimes I couldn't even, I just have to stand at the front because I couldn't walk to the back of the room because there were so many people in there. Offer baked goods. My show was always full.
Hey, whatever works. That's great.
Apparently the British love their baked goods.
So when you go there, to Edinburgh, I mean, do you have to like find your own accommodation? You have to do everything.
Yeah. Right? When you do a proper show, you have to do everything. You find the venue, the accommodation, you do. You know, I hired a publicist the one time in my life, it was just so much. It was overwhelming. I'm like, I don't know how to do all this. So I hired a publicist to help with that show. And then after that, I was like, okay, I can navigate these waters. And now the last couple of times I just go for a week or two. I don't go the whole month. And I just do gypsy comedy and just pop up. But you're going to lose money. Your liver's going to take a beating.
I did visit. I went there as a visitor once, hanging out, but I didn't. But somebody, I met this guy who was directing a play, and he got me a pass to the artist bar.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The Loft. They think it's all fancy. I used to laugh at them because I had a pass to the Loft. And because I grew up in Hollywood, like getting past like a lone security guard into a room is like, oh, it's so exclusive. I'm like, have you been to Hollywood?
Yeah.
Try breaking into the 321 Club, you know, on a premiere night. That's some work. This
you know
is nothing.
Non-exclusive it was? I got in. That should tell you.
This is how non-exclusive it is. I've been in it every single time. Yeah. In Edinburgh, and they're like, you just have to walk in with somebody. You pretend you know the doorman one time, and then after that, they're like, oh yeah, she's fine. She's fine. She's fine. So,
well,
but I had a pretty magical night there one night. Do you, what's the guy? He's pretty famous. He was on Saturday Night. Tiny thing. What is it? Little Hands. Rich. Not Rich Little, but Rich somebody. He lives in England now. He was on Saturday Night Live. He was there with Al Murray, who's a very famous British comedian.
Okay.
Danny Vermont, Al Lubell, another really famous British comedian who I can see his face. He's done a few shows here, but I can't think. And I'm standing there with five very famous British comedians and me at the Loft. And I'm like, how am I in this picture?
It's a nice photo to have.
It is a nice photo. But nobody in America, I'm like, these people sell at arenas, by the way.
Meanwhile, the rest of the world's like, how'd you Photoshop yourself into the photo? Well, that's cool. What was your worst night there? What was like your worst memory of doing Edinburgh in Scotland?
My worst night was the first night I stepped into Edinburgh. I had brought a one-woman show only because I'm an idiot. I heard Eddie Izzard give an interview one time, and he said no proper comedian is really a comedian until they've done Edinburgh. And I'm like, well, Eddie Izzard said it, I must do it, you know? And so I have a one-woman show, which I actually would like to revamp and do and sell to Netflix, but it's really cute and adorable, make a great rom-com. But enough self-promotion. Uh-huh. I brought the show, and it had a very specific outfit to it and a very specific costuming to it. And America, and I had put it on my carry-on because that's how important it was. But American Airlines made me check my bag because it was, and it's a bag I'd carried all over the world, a carry-on, and they said it was too big because this bitch from American Airlines just had it out for me that day. And they lost it. And I had tech that day when I arrived, and I had a show tomorrow, and I can't, and I had all this technical equipment with me. I mean, I came with full suitcases full of technical equipment for my show because there was a lot of audio and video that went with it. So it was very expensive and stupid to do this show, but I was like, I am going to do this. So I show up and I'm by myself in a foreign country doing a one-woman show for 30 days because I'm an idiot because I didn't take a break because I was like, why can't I perform 1 hour a day? Come on. And then you do it for 2 weeks and you realize you can't do this every day, but I did anyhow. And I show up and it's raining. I don't know if you've been to Edinburgh, but it rains like slaps
it's
your
Scotland.
Face.
It rains every day.
It can rain and slap your face into crying, weeping pump of person because you're like, I'm from California. We don't do rain like this. And it's pounding on my head and I'm tired and jet lagged and they've lost my costume for the show that I'm supposed to open tomorrow. And I was supposed to have reviewers the first night, which is horrible. And I'm just going to have to cancel the first show. And I had cried hysterically to the lady at the luggage claim people and she was so sweet. And that day there was a wine bar around the corner from the loft I had, or the flat I had rented for the let for the month, as they say. And I went to this wine bar and started crying. This really sweet lady, she just kept bringing me wine. She's like, it's gonna be okay. Anyhow, the lovely lady from the baggage department actually found it and had it delivered that morning to my place. So the show went off. But that was probably the worst night at Scotland. I was like, why am I doing this? Spending $10,000. I'm going to lose money. I'm going to care. Nobody's going to come. It's going to be awful. But it turned out to be amazing. Actually.
Did you get it was a 1 hour show?
1 hour show, yeah.
And so you have to do all your own promotion. You got to like all the flyers, all the posters,
well,
everything else.
The venue I worked at, you can hire people to help flyer for you. And luckily, because I was from California and they thought I was an anomaly, and I came with all these big cases of, they thought I was like a movie star. I came with full on case. My ex-husband worked in the television industry, so I came on full on gear that looked like I was really professional in the TV world.
Says they NBC on the side.
They thought I was like the shit. Right. So I don't know if you could swear right now, but they thought I was something important. So one of the flyers is a 6'5" Scottish guy, the guy who does promotions, and for like $9 a day, he promoted my show like nobody's business. And he used to go out looking for audience in a kilt. So he's a 6'5" Scottish guy, full kilt.
Can't miss
and
him.
Who doesn't want to talk to him? Everybody
Absolutely.
Wanted to take
Every
pictures.
Tourist.
Every tourist there wants to talk to him. He's like, this is the show you should go to. She's from California. It's like Bill and Ted's Adventure with her. And anyhow, he was amazing. And we're actually still friends.
That's great.
And he flyered my show a lot.
So you were here. So we should tell people what you do. You're physical therapy.
I'm a physical therapist and stand-up comedian.
So you work for yourself because I know people are wondering. It's like, wait a minute, how can you leave town this much?
I feel like I'm talking a lot, but this might your podcast and I'm
it's
talking
kind of what you're here for is to it'd be worse if it was the opposite.
It makes
my life easier actually.
I worked full-time for 9 years at a clinic I actually still work at, and then I left my full-time position for two reasons: one, to help care for my mom who's passed because she needed more, and then because I was using all my vacation days for travel. I'd be like, oh, I got a gig in Denver. I could take this day off and that day off. And so it just became easier not to have a full-time job. So now I work for a bunch of different people. I cover, like, I'm like a substitute teacher for therapists. So I just, and I work at the same clinics that I've worked at for over a decade. And they're just like, are you in town? Can you work? And I'm like, nah, I'm going to be gone. Sorry. And they're like, so I work when I'm here. And then when I'm gone,
That's
I don't
great.
Have to ask anybody for a day off.
Is it mostly therapy for like older people or people who have been in accidents?
Both. I work in outpatient orthopedics. So it's all your strains, sprains, backaches, hip replacement, knee replacement, shoulder repair.
Grandma took a fall.
CrossFit made to keep orthopedic surgeons in business. Zumba.
I know so many people got...
Pickleball's the new one, yeah.
Really? Turning ankles with pickleball?
No, wrists and elbows, baby.
Right. It's like the new tennis elbow kind of...
Yeah. Pickleball is like, it's upped their game a lot.
Really? Is it the tendons or something?
It's the elbow. The paddle's heavier and people don't train properly for it. They don't strengthen their back and shoulder. They just think, oh, it's fun, I can go play. And then they take up all the forces in their elbow and wrist. And the paddle's a little heavier, so...
Interesting.
Yeah.
So, I've only played a couple times.
Yeah, but. So pickleball, before the CrossFit, CrossFit's kind of like gotten better, but it's like, you know...
That's high impact.
Yeah, middle-aged men who think that they can just train one day a week and do stupid stuff.
Pull my cousin broke his leg doing that.
Yeah.
Climbing a rope.
We don't have time for form.
No. Climbing a rope.
Form is stupid.
Gym class in fifth grade.
Let's pull a tractor tire down the street because that's important.
Yeah, I have no desire for that anymore.
CrossFit. And then Zumba. Every time I got a middle-aged lady with like a torn meniscus, I'm like, Zumba? And she goes, how'd you know? I love my Zumba. And I'm like, oh, okay.
Oh, God. So you started a comedy, would you say 12 years ago, 13 years ago?
20 years ago.
20 years ago. But you were...
I'm taking a long time.
You were married for 13 years. When did 13 years come in?
Married for 28.
Okay. Married for 28. That's a lot.
I know.
So, I mean, and in California years, that's like 50.
I know, that's why I'm like... So I told you I got married at 12.
I know, and he was in the business.
Technical though. It wasn't helpful at all.
Okay.
Not talent, technical. Below the line, baby, below the line.
Yeah. So if you're, do you think, and this is, you know, if this is personal, whatever, do you think the travel and the stand-up came out of, you think you would have done it without your marriage? Yeah, I mean, did it drive you into finding something else? It's like, I need to have my own thing.
No, he encouraged it until he found out how much work it was going to take. I think he thought, like many people, like, how come you don't have that TV show yet? Why isn't HBO calling? Oh, okay. Yeah, because I've turned him down 5 times already.
Yeah.
He was like, why, you know, I think he thought you do like, you know, 10 shows and then suddenly HBO is calling.
Tonight Show, yeah.
Yeah. Why isn't the Tonight Show calling? Oh, because I don't even know how to contact those people. That's why they're not calling.
Yeah, that's we always, I have that one relative who goes, you know what you should do? You should call up that Jimmy Fallon.
Yeah.
Introduce yourself.
Yeah.
Tell him you're a comedian and then maybe he'll help you. It's like, I'm not selling aluminum siding here. Yeah. You know, everybody's trying to get on the... It's just,
you should just, you know, you should just get one of those TV shows. Oh, yeah, because they just come door to door with us.
You should just do your own sitcom. Oh, just like that. I should just, okay. Put on a nice suit and have a meeting.
Do you have a number? Because I'll call them.
But, I mean, were you... And I don't know, do you have children or no
none
children?
None that I know of.
Okay, good. Hey, that's good.
I feel like I'm raising some.
Yeah. So, I mean, you're kind of in an ideal situation, and you're actually one of the biggest in travel industry. I keep hearing this all the time from a lot of tourist organizations and everything. It's like women, like middle-aged women, are like the fastest-growing demographic of travelers.
Yeah. Particularly if you're single and no children.
Single or empty nesters.
Yeah, we have the most discretionary income, and no entertainment or anything is devised for us. So I keep trying to market that. I'm like, somebody put me on TV. I am the largest demographic in this country, and there's no real entertainment for us. So where help? I'll help. I have women after shows all the time. They're like, thank you. And I'm like, thank you for what? And they're like, finally, someone, like, I'm tired of like teenage boys telling me jokes, you know, because their husband, whatever, likes comics.
And yeah.
Like,
and every, you know, with that huge demographic, every, woman in the industry will tell you, you know, you hit a certain age and then you suddenly become invisible.
Oh, yeah. There's nobody more invisible than an aging female. I'll tell you right now. I went out to dinner with two friends of mine this weekend and they're younger than me and they're cute and they're fun. And the waiter was all about them. And I was like, he just like, I could have, I'm like, I it became hilarious. Like he was like, he would stand with his back to me and talk to them. And I'm like, oh, can I get another drink? Yeah, of course. Like I had to flag him down. I'm like, okay.
How much of these travels are you solo and how much are with, do you go with friends? Or?
I would say almost, I have traveled quite a bit by myself. I'm not afraid of that at all. Actually, the first time is kind of weird.
Where was the first one?
I called it Laura Palooza. The first big time I ever went by myself, I was supposed to go to, I planned a trip to Europe with a guy I was dating right after I was married, and he begged because he's an idiot.
Right after you were divorced.
After his divorce, yeah.
Okay, I was dating, I was married.
Yeah, that's what cut
in
the marriage.
I don't want to dig into your
so I was supposed to go with him, but he bagged out because he's an idiot. And I was like, forget it, I'm going by myself. So I called it Laura Palooza. So I had 3 weeks in Europe, and I went to Rome, Paris, Belgium, Monte Carlo, and there was one other place. Rome.
Nice?
No. I went to Nice. Yeah, Nice, Monte Carlo. London. Yeah. So, yeah.
Was this like your first trip to Europe?
No, not at all. That's why I was very comfortable. The thing is, like, right when I got separated from my husband, I got hired on cruise ships. And I for like 6 months, it was a godsend. I did the European tour. I got hired because I had been to Edinburgh and the lady knew that I knew how to entertain a British audience because they had hired American comedians. And if you've spent any time there, particularly California, young guy, California, you know, it's about managers and cars and car culture, and the British have no understanding of the entertainment industry or our car culture and that sort of thing. So I got hired on the fly because she goes, "You've been there, you spent months in the UK, you can entertain those types, right?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I can entertain those types." So I got hired, and I would just go from Venice and then ping around the boot, if you will, to Turkey and Montenegro and Croatia, bing, 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 Greece, back around. I would land in Rome, they'd fly me from Rome back to Venice, and then ping my way around the boot again. And then I did that for 6 months. And so I was pretty comfortable with that part. But the thing is, the funny part is I never actually had seen Rome at that point. That's why I picked Rome.
I would just
port to the airport and then fly me back over to Venice. I would actually have a night in Venice, but I never had a night in Rome. So I was like, that's why on the Lollapalooza, I went to Rome I was like, I've actually never explored the city. I've been to the airport and the port, the airport and the port, the airport and the port.
I know so many of those like that, but I'm doing... It's good that you, like, I should ask you about this because I'm doing my first, what line were you doing there?
Celebrity.
Okay. I'm doing my first Cunard ships in Alaska this summer.
Those are the nice ones, right?
Supposed to be like the Queen Elizabeth or whatever like the Cunard ships. But all the other comics who do these things tell me, dude, it's like not just Brits, but old Brits.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know, I've performed in front of a good number of Brits, but... what do you find the difference is in the mainly, other than references? I mean,
well, you gotta
they can be rough. I mean, they can lay to heckle, too, sometimes.
First off, you check your language, because there are definitely, that's the first thing I would go through, is check your language, just because there's going to be things that, you know, make sure it's something they understand.
The slang terms
and
stuff.
Like, you know, Girl Scouts, I have a joke about Girl Scouts, or AARP cards, or... things like, do they have these here? And usually I have a whole list to check with somebody that lives there. I'm like, do you, and you know, they don't call it, you know, they call it, when, you know, you ask for identification when you're carding someone, they don't call it carding. They call it an identification instead of like, they ask for my identification and then they call it a cellular, not a cell phone.
A mobile. You
know, a mobile, like that sort of thing. Just language wise that will make a joke not work or work depending on if you have the right word. It's just the word that they're familiar with. And then it depends on, are they English, are they Scottish, are they Irish? It makes a big difference. The Scots will laugh at anything immediately, and they're easy and fun. The Brits, the English are a little harder, a lot harder, actually. You know, the old joke, don't tell an Englishman a joke on Saturday night because he'll laugh at church on Sunday. They're a little hard. They like it pretty smart, but not too dirty for the English. Mm-hmm. The Scottish, you can do whatever you want. But the biggest thing is, I would tell people, is we have an accent to them, even though we don't think so. So you kind of have to slow it down.
I'm aware of that, but
you have to slow it down a little bit, because just like sometimes if they go really hard, you're like, I don't know what they just said. That's the same way with them.
Yeah.
And then, you know, just stick to the stuff that's universal. Relationships, those are always the same wherever you go.
I mean, I've done enough of the cruises to do that, but it's just old people in general can be tough anyway. But old Brits, I mean, they keep it to, you know, stiff upper.
Yeah.
And, you
just
know,
make fun of them.
just to get a rise out of them. Like, come on.
I just start with that.
I'm working here.
I just start with that. Where's the English? Okay, never mind. I don't care about you. Then they're like, I'm like, you're not going to laugh till tomorrow about this anyhow. And then they usually will laugh. So.
But on a European cruise, especially with celebrity, I'm sure you got a lot of Americans too.
Not that particular
cruise. Really?
It wasn't in the summer, actually.
Oh, that's probably why.
Yeah, it was. So it wasn't, and it was older. I like older audiences though, because as long as you can make them think about when they were young, they still remember. Yeah, sometimes younger audiences are harder, in my opinion.
Oh, I don't. I know. I'm 56 now.
Okay.
So I mean, it's funny. I just did a. I tell the story. I was asked to do a 55 and over community in Palm Springs.
I do a lot of those. I know exactly who you're doing.
Yeah, and at first I was like,
I don't
want to do a 55 and over community. I was like, wait a minute, I can live here. What the hell am I to say? It's like, oh, Jesus. Like, Gen X is now in the old folks' homes, and we're legally... I was just in Florida. I was driving by. It's like 55 and over community. And it's like, oh, I could live there if I don't want to, but I could.
Yep.
I just don't feel it like that. But I mean, I'm
Here's
more.
Here's what I can tell you. You never will.
No. I'm more in common with them and certainly our references.
Yeah.
With boomers because I grew up with all their music, uh-huh. all their stuff. And I don't know what to say to like a 22-year-old kids on dates at the Ice House or whatever. I mean, like. No, I eat it, man, and they don't want to hear from me. I'm like,
well, they don't care about they don't know anything about marriages, mother-in-laws, mortgages, and yeah. I call them adult things. Like they only have like a very small topic of things that they understand. Whereas an older audience, like they may not have college or roommates or dating anymore in their life, but they understand all that because they live through it. So I feel like there's a bigger vast of things to talk about right, with an yeah. older audience, as long as you keep it within their sensibilities.
Exactly. So, did you stop doing the cruises altogether?
The cruise line, the situation that it was in, they got replaced or fired or something. And I've actually tried to get back into it again because now I kind of have the time to do it again. And I can't seem to find the window in. So I'm like, all right.
Well, now a lot more guys are doing them.
I've emailed a few people, but I haven't knocked on the right door yet.
Tell me, well, I want to get to Japan because that's my next trip right now.
All right.
So this is the COVID. I don't know how, like, it's very, I know when I saw you, there was like three other people I knew at the same week that were there as well. Like Japan, like everybody's in Japan now.
Yeah.
I think it's like maybe my situation because I had this booked during April of 2020.
Oh.
And I had a free flight on Singapore Air
okay.
that I had to use. And then the world shut down.
Uh-huh.
And then they've kept bumping it. Like they've extending it.
That's my New Zealand. I was supposed to go to New Zealand 2020 and I still haven't been to New Zealand yet. But
and finally they were just like, we can't extend this anymore. You got to book it. So I booked it now. And we're going in April. So how was it? What did you, were too early for the cherry blossom?
I saw you're going to be right there in the middle. It's going to be spectacular.
I'm going to miss it, I think.
I don't. It was just, I could see how spectacular it would be. It was just starting to burst out. There was like a little bit of inkling of color. Like it was like 1 week into the, and so I could see like a little haze of color and I could see how spectacular it was going to be. Japan was amazing. Absolutely amazing. I'd wanted to go there since I was 8. So.
Oh, you hadn't been before?
No, I hadn't.
Okay, I've been once. I went to Tokyo and Kyoto.
Okay. Kyoto, I liked everywhere I'd been, but so you've been there, you understand. It was amazing.
It's cleanest, safest
cleanest,
place.
Quietest, safest big city I've ever been.
And there's 25 million people in Tokyo. It's insane.
I got home and I was like, why are we so loud and noisy and dirty?
Yeah.
Like I got
filthy.
Home. I flew home at 6 a.m. And of course, because I'm a maniac, I was at work at noon and I get in my car to drive and somebody's honking at me. Somebody's crossing the street in front of me who's not, you know, not looking, just crossing in front of me. Somebody's yelling at somebody.
There's homeless.
There's garbage on the street. And I'm like, we could learn something from the Japanese.
I've often said the Japanese think we live in the third world.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm sure they do.
Yeah. It's like, where's the bullet train? Oh, yeah. We don't have those.
The bullet train is no joke. The first time I saw it,
they're super cool, right?
Oh my God. I was waiting for the bullet train and then they don't slow down when they go through the station. So a train that was not stopping at that station just came whizzing through it 200 miles an hour. And I was standing there and I'm like, all right, well, that's no joke right there.
Yeah.
Like,
don't get in front of that baby.
What happened? It's gone. Okay.
Yeah. It's like a rocket just went by.
I did a video of Mount, because on the way to Hakkasan, I took the bullet train. It goes by Mount Fuji. And, I took it at real time on the bullet train, and it's like,
yeah.
You can see Mount Fuji in the background, but there's like poles just busting by.
So you went Tokyo, Kyoto, Hakkasan?
Hakkasan, no. Is that how you say it?
I don't know. Where did you get?
Hikone, the place with all the open mineral baths.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, on the base. Just
the onsen?
Onsen, yes, onsen.
The onsen spa.
I love nothing more than being naked with a bunch of Japanese women.
Okay, see, I want to do it. And my girlfriend's nervous. Was like, why do you want to get naked? That's what you do.
Well,
I did it in Finland. I don't care about
that. They don't mix them up. It's not male and female together. It's
exactly.
Separated, but you know.
That's what's, I don't know. It's more introverted than I am.
What's this large American girl doing here?
Okay, well, this is what somebody told me. They said, since you know, you're a white guy, they're a Westerner. When you go into the baths, you really have to shower before and make a show of like really lathering up and soaping because they think we're all like dirtier. So it's like they want you. You have to shower anyway to get in.
Yeah.
But it's almost like you have to go, look at me. I'm showering. Yeah. Look, I'm doing it before, you know, because they assume that you won't.
Yeah.
So you have to make it. Did you do it? Did
of
you
course,
have
to? I showered before.
How long are you in there for?
I was in there for a couple hours.
Okay.
I mean, it was outside. I had this, they had like all these different temperatures and different baths. I mean, there's very cold to like steamy, steamy hot. And then they had a couple little tiny mini pods, as I called them. And they were the right temperature and they were all to myself. And I had a beautiful view of the mountain. So I just hung out in my little mini pod.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
Is this a day trip from Tokyo?
Yeah, I wish I'd spent actually 2 days there because it was really beautiful.
I got to hear the name of that. But
Hikone.
Okay. Did you stay like in a hotel with the spa or?
They might have had a spa in my hotel. I never even got to find out. I stayed in pretty nice hotels, which pretty amazing in Japan. Like I pay because I'm bougie a little bit, and especially in a country I don't know. Like I don't know.
Well, yeah.
So I'm not gonna like go like you know really low like kind of in. Here's the deal: as a female traveler, men can get away with this a little bit more, but as a female traveler, never trade money for safety. That's my biggest take home, and so I always pick something where I like, I know there's going to be like a door person and something because I don't want to, especially in a country I don't know.
Yeah.
If I've been there before, I'm way more comfortable. But if I've never been there, like I want to make sure that like, oh, okay. Like if, you know, oh, she didn't show up for 5 days and she should have checked out. Somebody will notice, you know?
Yeah. Well, the good news is that, you know, in
Japan's very
safe. You can lowball it there and you're still
safe. Yeah, but I have a couple patients that have lived there and friends that have lived there and stuff. And they're like, you can do a 2-star hotel and it'd be better than your 4-star hotel.
Oh, yeah.
So,
because I did a 4-star hotel in India and it was not our 4 stars.
Yeah.
It was like, it was a sliding scale.
Their 4-star hotels in Japan are like our 5-star hotels.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So anyhow.
And the yen is
very strong.
Dollar is strong. It's good for us.
Yeah, it's very weak. So
yeah.
The biggest thing is the railway. I would tell people like,
did you figure it out?
I mean,
did you get lost?
You know, there's no trip where you don't get lost a few times.
Yeah.
But the thing is, like, if you buy a subway ticket in New York, it works on all the subways. In Japan, it's like, oh, you got to have the right company.
Right. There's the JR one. There's
the metro, the subway, the light rail, and the rail line, and the bullet train are all run by different companies, and you better have the right pass for the one you want to take.
Well, how long were you there?
2 weeks.
2 weeks, that's a lot.
Yeah.
I'm going for 10 days. But, yeah. I mean, if you, did you buy, like, a train pass beforehand?
I bought the JR rail line before, because I understand, I think you probably save, I mean, if I was going to do it again, I don't know if I would do that again. I think I saved maybe $100.
Yeah.
Which is okay.
Well, it's still $100.
I mean, yeah, it's still $100. I mean, but everything else I just did there. And the greatest thing, I mean, God bless the phone. How did we travel before the phone? You just type it into like Google Maps and it would tell me exactly what line I needed, how much the fare was. Because you have to pay with cash unless you have one of their passes from Japan, which I didn't do. So you have to pay with yen. And so it's a good way to get rid of the yen because it's all coins for the most part. Mm-hmm. So you just keep dropping it in until it says it's filled. But it tells you what the fare is and where to get off and everything. So I just did that and just followed the, you know, the Google blue dot along, and it was great.
That's great. So, I mean, the toughest thing, like I went solo the first time I went, and there are those lost in translation moments I found where you're just kind of wandering the street alone because they're not the kind of people that would just come up and talk to a stranger. Like you could sit in that bar all night and no one's talking to you.
No, not at all.
They just stay with themselves. So it's just like, it was amazing, and you're just walking around staring at stuff, but you're alone, you know, really kind of. So how did you fight it? I mean, or did you fight it, or did you meet people? Or
Met a surprising amount of people.
I'm also not a blonde lady.
Well, you know, the thing is, people are like, oh, they're going to love you. There's no one that cared that I was white and blonde. I didn't give a shit.
Especially not in Tokyo, not in big cities.
They didn't care at all. But I ended up in a soba noodle eating contest by accident, which was hilarious. It's
by accident.
I was walking around and the person I was traveling was hungry and she's like, hey, I want ramen. I'm like, okay, so you don't know what restaurant we looked at one. She's, oh, that's not the right one. That's right. And so we saw a little icon of a noodle bowl with chopsticks. She goes, there, that's the one we're going to go to. So, you know, all the buildings in Japan, they can be five stories high, and you open one door, it's a bar, another one's a restaurant, another one's a dog kennel. Like, you don't know.
That's the hardest thing, because it's all in Japanese.
It's all in Japanese, and there's all these little nook and cranny places. I found so many bars, I can't even believe it, whiskey bars and restaurants that hold six people. And I mean, it was amazing.
In the U.S., you know, we're so used to, like, all those businesses would be on the street level.
Yeah, no.
And that restaurant, you got the address, and that could be on the eighth floor.
Yeah.
And it could be in a closet, you know, off the eighth floor, and with a little sign, and you wouldn't even know.
I found the coolest bars going down a dark alley, opening a door. Oh, okay, there's a bar here. Okay, let's go in. Oh, it seats four. All right, great. And the owner's like, yay, you know, and they're very polite. And but anyhow, went up four flights, walked in the door, and it's like all these soba noodles on a conveyor belt, little bowls of them, and you eat them and they count them. You have 40 minutes to eat as many as you can, and there's a guy on a mic, like, basically yelling at you and telling you who's winning and everything. It was hilarious.
Oh,
I did not even come close to winning, but but it was very funny. And she's like, I don't know, but I'm like, we're here now. We came up four flights of stairs. It's raining. We're hungry. We're doing this. So anyhow, so we did it.
So how'd you do with the language? And did you use like a Google Translate?
A lot of point and smile. That's how I've worked everything. I mean, people are like, what about the language? And I'm like, Google Translate and point and smile has always been how I've gotten through everything. I'm like, I've been in countries that are, Japanese would probably, you know, Japanese and like Middle Eastern are like the two countries like where there's no even association. I mean, mostly in Europe, you can point and everything, but there, just point and smile and Google Translate.
Yeah. And the, what I found is like, you know, they have to learn English in the schools, but a lot of them, you know, as soon as they graduate, they forget it.
Yeah.
As soon as the test is over. But even the ones that can speak it and get by, they're ashamed that it's not good. They're always apologizing. Oh, I'm sorry, my English is not good. It's like, no, please. It's fine. It's good enough. It's better than my Japanese, which is nothing.
Yeah. I know three words in Japanese.
Yeah. Arigato.
Arigato gozaimasu, which is a polite thank you very much.
Arigato gozaimasu.
Arigato could be like, thank you, or thank you, like, thank you, like, sarcastic, thank you. It could be really informal, so.
I like the bow, though.
Oh, I love the bow.
The bow is great. Touching, every back on light, you know, it's good.
Everything. They're handing you a receipt for a cup of coffee. There's two hands, in the eye, and a bow. I'm like, all right.
I went to a baseball game there.
Oh, wow.
It was great. And we're going to go.
They
love the baseball. And I want to go to a sumo one.
Oh, this is one of the coolest things they did. It sounds like medieval times, but it was way cooler than that. It was called the Samurai Experience. And it was in Kyoto. And it's actually, it was a whole thing in an old samurai's house. So it's a beautiful 200-year-old house that was owned by one of those last samurai. And then they have some gentlemen who are obviously they don't have samurais anymore, but they were trained in the arts of samurai. And I'll tell you, that's no joke. It's so fast and slow and graceful and beautiful. And they have like the drum and the flute going with it. And they do a demonstration and then do a history. They did a history of the samurai, a brief history. And then they gave us a little tiny samurai lesson. And we got to chop stuff with 200-year-old samurai swords.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, they put you up and they give you a little samurai lesson and you chop stuff. And then Zen meditation is part of the whole samurai experience. And so afterwards, we did some Zen stuff with sound bowls. It was actually really, really cool.
Wow. Okay.
And that's after I had dressed up in a kimono earlier that day to walk around Gion, which is the geisha area of Kyoto, which that is no joke either. It took 20 minutes, tiny little Japanese lady, 20 minutes to strap my body into one of these things. And I'll tell you, getting on the ground is a work in that outfit. And my shoe broke because my big American foot, they didn't have anything big enough. So I broke one of their shoes. But
I've heard a lot of ladies say that when they try to buy clothes there is hard because nothing's in their size.
I didn't even try, but but it was cool. They dressed you up and it was an interesting, I thought they would think it was stupid, like, who's this Caucasian girl dressed up? And actually they were all like, you look beautiful, you look so nice. And I'm like, okay.
But what do you do once you dress up?
Well, I walked around the whole geisha area, the Gion district in Kyoto, where all the geisha houses still are. Walked around, did some sightseeing, went to some temples and stuff. I mean, I had all dressed up.
But there's not, I mean, I have to look into like what technically a geisha is. I mean, they're like serving, right? I mean,
geishas were kind of like
handmaidens almost.
They were like courtesans.
Yeah.
They were not always prostitution, but they could be if purchased enough, but it was entertaining men, if you will. So, and apparently there's still some in that area. 200, I guess, still live and work in that area.
But a lot of it, like you'll see, you know, in the full outfits, like even walking around certain places in Tokyo.
Yeah.
But I think a guy told me who lived there is like, a lot of times that's just like a ceremonial thing. They're going to, you know, a formal party or something, but they're not real geishas.
Just because they're in their kimono doesn't mean they're a geisha.
Yeah.
Usually geishas in the full, like, hair and everything, if they're just wearing a kimono, it might be just what they... I mean, I saw a few women out to dinner and with their family, and so that was their dress-up gear. This is my nice dress.
Yeah. Are you doing the... Did you do the karaoke?
I did not. I don't sing.
I never stopped anybody from doing karaoke.
Yeah,
I can't either.
I did see some of it, but I didn't. Well, they do it mostly privately there.
Yeah, it's all private rooms.
Yeah, they do have some public thing, but mostly it's just private. So I saw some, but I didn't do some. They're one of the bars. I opened the door, you know, had a karaoke bar situation going for 12 people, and walked in, had a drink, and watched some people singing some Bad Journey.
Yeah. What's the best thing you and the worst thing you ate while you were there?
I would say the weirdest thing, not the worst thing. Somebody told me to go to this hot pot restaurant, which has collagen teddy bears.
Oh, yeah. I saw that.
It's for the Instagram people. I can't tell you the amount of weird, you know, they dress up. The underbelly of Japan is they're in love with the young girl look. And it's a little frightening, actually. Oh, I found this out. This is creepy. You cannot buy a smartphone in Japan. If you buy a smartphone in Japan, you have to get out of the country. You cannot turn off the sound for the camera. Even if you turn off all the bells and whistles, it will still make noise when you take a picture because of the creepy underbelly of Japan.
Oh, right.
You can't take a silent picture in Japan.
Okay.
So anyhow.
Put it under your dress
So it's a hot pot restaurant, and they bring you, you know, this bowl with a collagen bear in it that melts down, and you add all your vegetables and stuff, and it melts down, and it starts to look, you know, like an accident happened here.
Yeah.
a medical accident.
Did you post that? Because somebody did. Okay, maybe that's where I saw it.
Somebody's like, I thought that somebody sent it to me, and I thought they had been there. I went there, and I was sitting next to a girl dressed as a maid who had like these little like paper figures of people that she was taking pictures with herself and the collagen bear. And I was like, oh my God, I'm in somebody's Instagram video.
Yeah.
But there was a lot of that. It was a lot of TikTok weirdness going on with that place. So that was like the weirdest. One of the best restaurants I went to was by accident coming back walking, and I was just hungry, and I just kept looking at restaurants. I'm like, no, not right, not right, not right, not right. And then I walked into this one. I'm like, seemed right. And they do basically like a burger patty, like the Wagyu burger patty, but they do it without the bun, and they serve it on vegetables and grilled vegetables and stuff. And it was the whole restaurant was amazing. Everything they served was amazing.
Wow.
So they served on, and it was obviously a well-trained chef, but it was amazing. The person serving was also the sous chef, and the chef was off to the side. And I think this whole restaurant only had room for 12 people, and it was a very high-end restaurant, but it was a very small local place. It was great.
Are you a sushi fan?
I'm not allowed to eat sushi, so that was weird.
That's tough in Japan.
Well, I used to eat sushi, and then my internist was like, stop doing that. So
mercury?
More disgusting than that.
Okay, well, good. I'll take your word. Did you go to the fish market, though?
I did, which was fascinating.
Right? I mean, I didn't go. And it's like, it seems
you
to
should
be
go this time.
One of those things you could do on the first day when you're jet lagged and waking up at all weird, because it's super early in the morning, right? And you got to get out there. It's like a haul out there, right?
Yeah. The last night I was there, I went to Tokyo, then Kyoto, then Osaka. And then I came back and had one day in Tokyo. And the day I was in Tokyo, I booked a hotel that was near the fish market, so I would hit that.
Okay.
So before I flew out.
Yeah. They said, they're pulling stuff out of the ocean that you can't even, you don't even know what it is. It's like, what?
You're like, what is this alien thing?
Yeah, if it's in the ocean, they're eating it.
Yeah, the octopus balls apparently the one thing I was supposed to eat. And I can't eat octopus anymore because of the whole My Octopus Friend, which is a creepy movie.
Yeah.
My octopus teacher, that's what it is. And I thought the movie was interesting and creepy at the same time. But now that I know how smart they are, I'm like, I feel like I'm eating a human. Like, it's just bugging me. So
yeah, well, I'm going to go with a vegetarian, so this should be interesting.
They have the Japanese strawberry is no joke. I'll just tell you that right now.
Yeah, I have heard this.
Oh my gosh.
What is it? They grow it differently? It's a different breed
of strawberry in the soil or something. I grew up down the street from a strawberry field. I grew up in Southern California down the street from a strawberry field. I have never had strawberries like this ever. I couldn't eat enough of them. And but yeah, yep. Yeah, there's lots of vegetables. She'll be fine.
I remember grabbing a lot of lunches at 7-Eleven.
Yeah, no, they have because the 7-Eleven.
The fish was actually good, and there was little snacks. And
my patient who lived there, she goes, the 7-Eleven is no joke there. She goes, you might as well call it Whole Foods because everybody eats at 7-Eleven. She goes, it's not like here where it's like you got some stale hot dog
on a roller
rotisserie for 3 days, and here you go,
bag of Funyuns.
No, she's like, they have a chef that puts together that food, and I'm like, yeah. The 7-Eleven was always wiped out. People were always eating there.
Oh yeah,
so
it saved a lot of money. In there, like those $2, I forget what they're, amasubi, the little rice.
Oh yeah,
and with wrapped in seaweed paper, uh-huh. And then like a little sandwich, a little mm-hmm. triangle.
Yeah,
man, I ate a ton of those.
Yeah.
How long were you in Kyoto?
4 days.
Okay, 4. Yeah, we're trying to figure out I mean, there's a lot to see there, but I don't know how long we should say because we have less time.
I'd like to see
a third place
too. I didn't know what I was getting into, so I just went Tokyo, Kyoto, Osaka. I'd like to go back and spend more time in some other places.
Yeah, I wanted to go to the North Island. I had a whole thing.
I mean,
4 years ago, I was going to go skiing. I had like a whole thing
Nikko,
planned.
I know.
And then, yeah.
Now I have a whole list of what I would like to see again. But, I mean, you could spend the whole time in Tokyo and be fascinated every single day.
Yeah. And you... You did comedy at a place that I'm going to do it.
Are you? They're
yeah,
so
I
nice.
Already set up the Tokyo so Comedy nice. Club or
it's,
whatever.
It's it reminds me of the old Ice House, but smaller.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, but maybe not. Yeah, the old grungy Ice House, like before the first remodel. Like,
yeah. Did you stay? Where neighborhood did you stay in?
I was in Shinodome.
Okay. I was in Shibuya. I'm probably going to go to... I think the club's in Shibuya.
Yeah.
So I was looking at places around there.
Yeah.
At least for the first 4 days.
Yeah, and all the action's there. So, you know,
yeah, the crossing.
9,000
stuff.
The crossing.
Yeah. I mean, so, okay, where haven't you been that you're dying to go to? What's your bucket list?
My bucket list, New Zealand is definitely up there.
Beautiful.
I was supposed to go in 2020, like I told you. I have not been to Berlin, so that's on my list. I was supposed to go to St. Petersburg, but then Putin was Putin.
Yeah.
And so I really would like to go to St. Petersburg. So when I was supposed to go to St. Petersburg, I was supposed to go to St. Peter, and I already had tickets to Stockholm, and then I didn't go to St. Petersburg, so I had to change my itinerary. So I'd actually like to go back to Sweden, but I haven't been to Norway and Denmark. I'd like to do that part. Because I haven't been there at all.
You didn't do it on the cruise? You didn't do a Baltic
cruise? No, my cruise was purely just...
All Mediterranean.
All Mediterranean. Just wrapped around.
Not so bad.
No, it was perfect. It was. I haven't been to Austria. That's on my list. My favorite wines in the world come from the Alsace area between France and Germany, so I'd like to go there.
Mm-hmm.
Believe it or not, I have not been to Niagara Falls or Yosemite.
So come on. Really? Yosemite?
I grew up in California. I have not been to Yosemite, so I'm hoping to do that this fall. So
that's amazing.
I know. People are like, it's the most beautiful place in the world. What are you talking about?
Niagara is, you can see it, but I mean, it's, you know, it's okay.
I want to go to Micronesia.
Oh, Micronesia up in...
Papua
New Guinea and all that stuff. And
I have a postcard from there that I had since I was like 20. I'm like, this looks really beautiful.
I've never been, but I want to go because I dive too. So okay. I also want to go. Palau is on my list of places to dive. But have you been to the Philippines or any of those places?
I've been to Indonesia. I haven't been to the Philippines. I've been to Indonesia and Malaysia.
Okay. You went to Bali?
I went to Bali because...
Were you one of the white women with their yoga mat walking around her boob?
I was in that's one of my funniest stories.
Okay, here we go. This is why we're here.
I got many. I was in Perth doing the Perth Comedy Festival, and our good friend Charlene May Prunier loves Eat, Pray, Love. That's like her favorite movie or one of them. And she's like, well, we have to go to Bali because it's like right there. And I'm like, okay. And she's like, we have to go. And I'm like, okay. So we almost got stuck there. It was just before the pandemic.
Oh.
And we were in a, she's like, should we go low end or should we go high end? And I'm like, This is your journey. I'm on your ticket. What do you want to do? She goes, I think we should go. So we got like this amazing, maybe because of COVID, we're like in a 6-star hotel.
And well, for like surrounded by rice paddies and one of those.
We had a swimming pool larger than this room in our living room. And then a sunken tub and the shower that could hold 9 people. And that's after the infinity pool that was 6 feet from our door. So anyhow, she wants to go see a shaman because of Eat, Pray, Love, because she's going to have this breakthrough moment. So she's researching. She's like, well, what do you think? She's reading all. She's doing so much research that I think she made herself. She goes, who knew they had Yelp reviews? But they do. So she finally, I said, you know, anybody that passed mustard with you is fine. I'm like, I'm not, this is your journey. I'm just going with you. So she picks one. We get a driver. They drive us like an hour into the jungle. They drop us off. Don't even know if it's the right place because there's no sign that says, you know,
shaman.
So here we go.
Neon sign.
No, nothing. But there's a few touristy looking people out there. I'm like, figured this is the right place. So we stand outside the doorway for a long time. There's a line that's a thing that says clean yourself with the holy water. It doesn't say how, or and it was just a Tupperware. It looked like just water to me, but whatever. That's the holy water. It doesn't say, you know, sprinkle around on your head or over your shoulder or whatever. And I'm like, okay. So I just, you know, I was like, okay, are we, and then nobody comes. There's like, nope, there's nobody. So we just hear a voice around the corner. It's a house. And we go around like this garage thing and we stand kind of to the side because we don't want to break in on somebody else's, you know, awakening. And so finally nobody, it's like 20 minutes and we just standing there. So finally we just kind of peek our eyes and she goes, come here. And there's this lady in a white dress, white top, long hair. She looks like she's young until she turns around and you're like, she's not so young. And there's one girl sitting on this stoop in like muddy water, whatever. And the lady's like, sit. And we look over and there's like, it had been raining, so it's basically a muddy step. And, you know, we're like, look at it, and she's like, she put down some towels or some bamboo mats for us to sit on. We sit down, and we're still sitting in wet mud, but whatever. And I'm like, okay. So she pulls out all these laminated articles about it. She goes, I'm famous, because these were her, I guess this was her resume.
She's got a press clipping.
Yeah, press clippings. She's like, I'm famous. And so girl sitting next to me and I'm like, what's going on? And she's like, I don't know. And she's like, my mom told me I had to come to see somebody when I was in Bali, so I'm here. She goes, I really don't know what's going on. And I'm like, okay. And then she looks at me and she goes, stand up. And I'm like, all right. I stand up. She goes, you have a fat liver. And I was like, okay. And she goes, I'll show you. And I'm like, okay. And and I'm wearing only a sundress and pretty much nothing else.
Okay.
And she's like, she's like, lift up, I'll take a picture. And I'm like, I already told you, I don't like to do public nudity. I really don't want to lift up my dress for 3 people to flash them my bare buns.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, I'll show you. And I'm like, I'm looking at my friend Charlene. And I'm like, and she's like, don't ruin this for me. And I'm like, I'm looking at her. I'm like, I really don't want to do this. I don't do public nudity. And she's like, don't ruin this for me. I'm like, all right. So she takes a picture and it's mortifying. I'm like, can't delete this picture fast enough. And so I sit down and she's like, and the girl goes, she made me do it too. And I'm like, she goes, but I only had to pull down my shorts a little bit. And I'm like, yeah, less embarrassing. So we're sitting there and then she grabs my hands and looks at them. She goes, you're a healer. And I'm like, yes. And she goes, powerful healer. And I'm like, okay. So then she grabs some sort of, I guess it was her Amway speech of this thing of how I can buy her seeds and recipes for healing,
okay.
And that I can sell them in the United States. And only for $100, I can sell her stuff. Okay, so the afternoon goes on. We're rubbing lettuce on our heads with olive oil. I'm not even kidding you. We're rubbing lettuce and olive oil into our chest and on our heads and in our armpits. And she's telling Charlene she's never going to be famous or have love and that it's over for her. And we're like, how long do we rub the lettuce on our heads? And the other girl's like, I don't know. I've been doing it for like half an hour. So we're rubbing lettuce on our heads. And I'm looking at Charlene. Charlene's going the whole time. She's like, shut up. Don't ruin this for me. So finally, we're there for like 3 or 4 hours. And nothing really has happened except that I've been humiliated. I've been fat shamed by a shaman. And I've been Amway.
Sold.
I've been trying to get into the pyramid scheme of the beads, you know, the seeds and recipes. She sent us home with some weird beads. And and then the 3 of us took an Uber back to the city. So that's so it's
reeking so
instead,
of lettuce.
Instead of the Great Awakening, I was just fat shamed by Shaman Bali. So
I like to see. Yeah, I hope he left a horrible Yelp review.
And then we got the. I got this bag of seeds, and she's like, "Are you going to eat those?" I'm like, "No." I'm like, "I don't eat street food. I'm not going to eat this." All
right. So you don't do street food, or you're not an adventurous eater?
I'd be lying to say like some of the street food, like in Osaka and stuff. You know, sure. It's like really like high end, and it's fine. But the reason I can't eat sushi and stuff, I've gotten really sick because I was pretty experimental in my youth about like, oh, I can eat anything. Apparently I cannot. Oh, so
gotcha.
About the fourth or fifth time, my internist is like, you know what? No, this is what you need to do in your life. So I have followed those rules and I've spent a lot less time visiting him.
Yeah.
So
is it like not to get...
I'm parasites. I'm a very hospitable host.
So you can have meat though.
Yeah, as long as I can eat only cooked proteins.
Okay, nothing raw.
Nothing raw. Okay. So no tartare, no remis fizzes, no carbonara.
Yeah, even vegetables though.
Just uncooked proteins.
Okay, uncooked proteins. Got it.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, that's easily.
Apparently, I am very alkaline. That's why.
Okay.
So if there's anything that's like kind of lingering around, it will inhabit me, apparently.
The good news is most of the world cooks their meat.
Yes.
except you know.
So I
fish in Japan.
Yeah, you know. No street food in Mexico. Street food in New York. Sushi in Hawaii, and then also sushi in California. I got sick. So, and then some tartare at one time. And so anyhow, he's like, just stop doing this.
Have you been in India?
I have not. No, I don't know.
Beware of your gastrointestinal.
I would like to go, but it's not high on my list.
I get it.
It's
hard, you know. I mean, you're a traveler, so I mean, you would do better than most. I mean, because but you know what you're getting into.
But the poverty thing is
it's hard.
It's hard, and I've been in some pretty gnarly. I mean,
it's still the worst I've seen. And I've been to like you know
Ethiopia is probably the worst I've seen.
I've been to Ethiopia too.
Yeah, Ethiopia is gorgeous,
and the food is great.
I know. I tell people all the time. This is such a jerk off thing to say. I said Ethiopia is beautiful with beautiful people. Beautiful landscape, gorgeous country, and turns out the food's delicious.
Yeah,
it's just a little pricey for the locals.
Yeah, I loved it. Yeah, that was one of the reasons I went.
Ethiopian food is fantastic.
Rest of Africa, it's kind of bland, but there you get there like ooh.
And the coffee is no joke. I remember leaving things so I could put more Ethiopian coffee in my suitcase. I'm like, I don't need this.
No, it's great. Yeah. Have you ever had any problems with like? Border agents and pass any bribes, any police issues?
I get felt down every single time. I think because it's so like racial profiling, because I'm so opposite of what they're looking for, even though I have TSA pre-checked and global entry, probably every single time before I got TSA pre-checked, I would be pulled out for extra pat down, no matter where I was in the world. No matter where I was in the world. Now it's like every third time, even though I have TSA and global entry, I still get pulled to the side. I think I'm so opposite of what they're supposedly looking for.
Or they're just creepy.
I'm always like, can you put a lint brush on that and take some lint off while you're patting me down?
Yeah, buy me dinner first.
I've been pulled over for random reasons. Like I just held for like an hour and I don't know why. But actually always in the United States.
Oh, in the US.
Yeah. In Jordan, actually, this is a hilarious and embarrassed story, but I'll tell you that. In Jordan, I was traveling for the guy's military tour, and one of the guys hot-headed a little bit because he had bought in Venice one of those masks that they sell, and the guy in Jordan didn't want him to have it. He goes, you can't have this. He goes, what do you mean you can't have it? And he's starting to get kind of ugly, which is surprising. He's acting very American for a Canadian. and I had a glass, and I'm a little thievy. I had taken a glass that had the name of the restaurant that we ate at, and it was in my carry-on luggage. I had told the waiter I was going to take it. He said, just take it. So it was an actual wine glass, and it was in my luggage. And the guy pulled it out and goes, you can't have this in Jordan. And he's like, you can't have this. And I'm like, okay. And he's like, you can't have it. And I guess he was expecting a reaction. I'd wrapped it in a scarf, so it was really safe. And he's like, you can't have this. I'm like, okay. And he's like, you can't have it. And I'm like, okay. Take it. And he's like, and because I didn't make it, he just wrapped it up and put it back in my luggage.
Yeah.
He wanted an argument. He wanted an argument and he didn't get one. But have you been in the Middle East at all?
Yeah, I've been to Jordan. I've been to Israel. That's pretty much it. I mean, I haven't, Egypt is high on my list and I haven't been yet.
I've been to Egypt a couple times. Military tours. So I forget exactly where we are, but I think it might've been Saudi. I think it was Saudi Arabia. Anyhow, they don't like women there. I don't know if you know that.
I've read a few things.
And they particularly don't like white women there. And so we had gone through security. And then because we were taking a small plane, we had gone through security again. So you went through regular security, and then they go through your luggage all again and regular security. And the restroom for the women, not the men, is outside the secondary security. So I left to go to the restroom because, for our flight. So I left all my luggage with the guys I was traveling with. All I had was my boarding pass and my passport. And I went to the women's restroom because I know it's the Middle East and they don't care about women. Usually in my purse, I carry Kleenex and stuff because there will be nothing for women in the women's bathroom. No toiletries at all.
Right.
Zero. You're lucky if there's water. So anyhow, I went there and there was no... I'm writing a bit about, is there anything that you're so embarrassed about and also slightly proud of at the same time? This is one of those moments. So I'm in the bathroom. I have nothing. So I used my boarding pass as toilet paper. And then I handed that soggy boarding pass to that very, very misogynistic security guy. I'm like, go ahead. Yeah, right there. That's my pee you're touching right there. As he checked it again, even though I had just gone through like 4 minutes ago, he's checking it again, like looking at everything like, oh, is it, you know, woman, you know, spit, whatever. And he's looking at him like, oh, yeah, you read every line of that. You just line your finger over the top of that. Anyhow. So
not only you're a woman, but you're also American.
Yeah.
Strike two.
Strike two, exactly. And I'm not wearing a headdress.
Yeah.
Actually, there I had to, but...
Yeah, you covered your head and shoulders and everything else.
Well, yeah, the guys can wear whatever they want. I have to have clothes down to my ankles and down to my wrist.
Yeah, put your burqa on and go.
Well, only in Saudi, but in public places. On a military basis, you don't have to, but...
Have you, like, in Muslim countries, I mean, it can be tough. I mean, have you run into, other than that, other places where you are out of your depth?
Well, actually... One of my favorite stories is when I work on the cruise ship in Turkey. So I think they should give out information to people who are travelers in Turkey that this is a Muslim country as well. Be careful. Yeah. So
it's light Muslim, but it's Muslim.
It's definitely Muslim light. And so I was working on a cruise ship, and two of the passengers, I called them sex on sticks. They were two women from Brazil, and they never went. They never went.
Slower.
They never went anywhere without the heels and the short skirts.
Oh, of course.
Everything was like bam, bam, hair, boobs.
As if at any moment, like they're going into a nightclub.
Yeah, it was carnival every single day. And so we're going, we're in, I forget which port in Turkey, but the shopping area, the Grand Bazaar, whatever, all of the Grand Bazaars, because every city has a Grand Bazaar in Turkey, apparently. So I'm wearing, my tennis shorts and polo shirt, and I was, especially when I'm traveling alone, I leave my headphones in on purpose, even if they're not on, so I can listen to what's going on, but I pretend I don't speak English and I'm listening to music. But Tijuana's got nothing on these people. They will pull the headphones out of your ears and go, lady, and grab you by the arm. I have what you want. They'll drag you into the store. Anyhow, I had the advantage, and I didn't do it on purpose, but then I just did it, that the two sex on sticks were just walking in front of me the entire time to the Grand Bazaar.
And you're like
nobody could care about the white woman with, with Bermuda shorts and a polo shirt and a cap on and earplugs when sex on a stick, double your trouble, sex on sticks. I mean, somebody should have told them they're wearing short skirts, halter tops, high heels, hair done. And I was like, oh man, these guys do not know what to do with themselves. I would have been back on the ship putting on clothes if I were them, but they were just walking like they were oblivious. I'm like, somebody should have told them, like, this may not be what you want to wear on shore here. But I just followed them, and everybody left me alone that day.
That's usually the running joke with Russian women. Like, Russian women, no matter where you're at, they're always dressed to, like, go to the club.
Uh-huh.
In miniskirts, high heels, walking on cobblestone streets, and we're hiking Kilimanjaro. And it's like, really? The heels? You got to bring the designer purse to,
exactly.
Just smoking the whole time. And they're like, what are you?
The only thing they weren't doing was smoking, but they were, and I just followed them all day long, and nobody cared what I was doing. And I'd been to this port before, so I knew what to expect.
Yeah,
and I just followed them. I was like, just follow sex on a stick all day. My life is easy.
What do you, we got to wrap it up soon because I know we got to,
you
got things to do. What are there, like, other stories that you've been saving?
I have lots of stories. I was with a Turkish woman, but it was actually in Kuwait. I changed shoes with a Muslim woman in a bathroom in the airport in Istanbul.
Why?
And I was wearing sparkly black Converse, and she was wearing gold cowboy boots under her burqa. And she was like, she goes, oh my gosh, I love your shoes so much. We're in the bathroom. And I said, I love your shoes so much. She goes, she's like, let me try them on. And I'm like, okay. So she's like, I want them. I want them. And I'm like, okay. So I came back from the bathroom when I'm traveling on a military tour. And the guys are like, pretty sure I would have remembered if you were wearing gold cowboy boots when you left. And I'm like, I was doing international relations in the bathroom. I traded shoes with a girl from Turkey.
And they fit?
Yeah. Well enough.
You still have them?
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Locally, I was probably the first places I traveled a lot was Boston because I got my doctorate from BU and I was doing the Avon breast walks every year, because I'm big on that sort of stuff about women's health. And the first year I did the Avon breast walk, it's 40 miles and I had to walk it in the rain. And I was just like, and, at the last day I went back, on the night after 4 miles, I went to a restaurant in the back bay and I ended up sitting at a bar restaurant by myself. And I was like, I deserve it. So I ordered a bottle of wine because they had crappy wine by the glass, and I'm a snob. And a man sits down next to me, older man. And I was like, I didn't really want to talk to anybody, but that's fine. And he starts talking to me and he's like, oh, I see you ordered a bottle, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, you want some? I won't drink it all. And he goes, okay. So I end up sharing with him. Anyhow, over the course of the evening, he shares with me that this was his favorite restaurant with his wife. And that they used to go here, and she died like 3 months ago from breast cancer. It was the first time he's been out. So very nicely, he picked up the tab and everything. And he was angry that I had never been to a Red Sox game. Because I'd been to Boston so many times, never been. He goes, if I send you a ticket, will you come back? And I said, absolutely, I'll come back. So he sends me a ticket for a game October 4th of 2004, 18th of 2004. It was the, I can make this story really long, but anyhow, it was the...
Is that the year they won the everything?
It was the game they won 14 innings against the Yankees.
Yeah.
And came back to win 3-0 and came on to win the series. And
so you saw history.
I saw history. And he credited me. He goes, I've been going to Red Sox games since I was 4 years old and they have never won. He goes, I give a ticket to you and they won the World Series too. So this very fine gentleman in Boston, the Red Sox won the World Series because of me. You're welcome.
Wow.
But I mean, it was a really long story, but it was like, it was really, he's like, and everybody's like, he sent you that ticket? And I'm like, he sent me that ticket. So
I know. It was like a playoff game. It was big.
It was a big
October.
Playoff game. I mean, yeah. Playoff game. Ended to the curse of the Bambino. You're welcome, Red Sox.
Yeah. Well done.
That was all me.
Very good. Very good. We should get your plugs in too. You had a whiskey
podcast. Yeah.
Podcast,
that's kind of on hiatus.
That's done, huh?
I lost sponsorship, so it lost
its but you got whiskey though.
I have a lot of whiskey. Come to my house. It's a party.
See, now I booked my first cruise in Scotland coming up in late August, early September. And whiskey, it's I've tried it. You know, I've gone on tours and I've done tastings and just like it's lost on me. Like I'm worried that I don't mind bourbon as much, maybe because it's sweeter.
Bourbon
but
is
Scotch,
sweeter.
I just can't do it.
Yeah, you know, you just have to have your life be bitter enough, and then
I guess
like...
what it is. Yeah, I like vodka. I like bourbons.
Started drinking whiskey on a cruise. I worked the east coast of Canada where people go for the last time to see the leaves turn before they die.
Yeah, and I've done those. I went Boston and Montreal.
Yeah,
that
yeah,
one.
Up to there, Newfoundland or Labrador.
Newfoundland Nova Scotia.
I only had to do two shows a week. That leaves a lot of free time for drinking. And I was like, I can't afford my bar tab if I'm drinking wine. So I started the comic I was working with drank whiskey. And so I started drinking whiskey because it took me all night to drink one whiskey as opposed to I can drink a bottle of wine and, you know, a lot faster than that.
Right.
I'm like, so one whiskey, so economically I just started and then it just sort of stuck and I liked it. I can't start full hard peat, but I can end that way. But I like bourbon too. I mean, bourbon is whiskey. It's just metal.
Yeah,
but,
I know. It's sweeter, a little smoother.
They can get some softer scotches. There's some people making some stuff that's not so like punchy in the face.
Yeah.
peated. Like smoky peated stuff. Like that's really hard to take at first. But you find something from the, from the lowlands kind of thing. It's a lot softer.
Okay.
But yeah, it didn't start that way. Now, you know, people are like, oh, do you like White Claw? And I'm like, yeah, if you put some booze in it, I would.
Yeah.
I'm like, thanks for the mixer.
Well, I've only been to Glasgow and Edinburgh.
Okay.
But, you know, this will be my first. So I have like 5 days off.
Nice.
I'm getting off a ship in Cork, Ireland.
Okay.
And then I'll have like 5 days off before I got to meet this ship in Invergordon, which is north of Inverness.
Uh-huh.
So it's up there.
Yeah.
So I wanted to get up there because
they make some hardcore whiskey up there.
Yeah.
They have one really big distillery there, actually. And it's, you know, go there. It's beautiful.
All right. But, no, there's so much I want to see. Did you get all those times to Edinburgh? Did you get a chance to explore it all?
I didn't go much. I was mostly in Edinburgh. I've gone up to, you know, to St. Andrews. I've been up there, and I didn't. I'm not allowed to play the course.
You didn't even do a whiskey tour?
I did. I've done a couple of whiskey tours.
What's your favorite? Give me the recommendations, and give the people recommendations.
I mean, honestly, I'm kind of boring this way because I pretty much will drink whatever's in front of me. I was in love with Japanese whiskey. I had the best time in Japan. They love it. They have great whiskey, and it's very user friendly. It's very nice. My go-to, because usually most bars will have it, is I just order Basil Hayden's because it's easy and soft, and I know it won't hurt me. Like some of the other whiskeys, like some of them are a little, it's just an easy drink for me, probably too easy, but I think that's my problem. I can drink anything.
Yeah. So, I like sake too.
I don't like sake.
Really? Oh, you didn't.
But
have
I mean,
it.
I'll drink it.
Oh.
I'll drink anything. I mean, that I think that's what the problem was. I used to do a joke like 20 years ago. I'm like, eventually, I'm gonna have to. I used to do the chronology of your drinking. I can tell where you are in school by what you drink. Like, you know, if you're drinking White Claw, you're in kindergarten. You know, and if
right.
if you're drinking, you know, some sort of vodka with
Boone's Farm, or
if
something.
You're drinking vodka cranberry, it means you've in junior high. You know. If you've moved into like a margarita on the rocks, you might be in high school. You know, if you're starting drinking wine postgraduate, if you're drinking scotch on the rocks, okay, you might be, you know.
You're divorced.
You're in graduate school. And then I'm like, I'm going to have to start drinking scotch. And it was a joke. I didn't drink scotch then. I'm like, I'm going to start drinking scotch with a gasoline chaser to slow myself down.
So that lady in Bali was right. You had the fatty liver. She saw right through you.
I do have a fatty liver.
You like whiskey. That's what she said.
I have a fatty liver, apparently. Yeah. As I was flashed three people in my big white ass.
Get your plugs in. Where can people follow you on Instagram or Facebook?
Instagram is Dr. Laura Hayden. Facebook is Laura Hayden. I forget what Twitter is. Laura Hayden.
We'll have links
TikTok,
to all this.
Laura Hayden. LauraHayden.com is my website. I do shows locally, and then wherever I get invited, that's how my MO is. I have a show you're welcome to do, by the way. I have a bar show in Long Beach once a month on Tuesday at a place called Gallagher's. I just picked it up. I inherited it from a lady that left. You know, so it's a good bar show.
What night of the week
means,
is it?
It's a Tuesday. It means there's 2-for-1 burgers and probably, a sparse audience and
all right, I'll do it.
And bad lighting, so come enjoy this.
Well, Long Beach, from where I'm living now, is doable.
Yeah,
I mean, that's not too bad.
Like,
but when I was living in Hollywood, it was
get a few bucks on my appreciation. Everybody wants to come on down.
Yeah, sure.
But it's a fun show because I know people, so the shows are great. I'm just like, but I just inherited, so we're only like on our third one. It's new.
Okay.
So
So you're doing TikTok.
You know, when I think about it, I do. I'm not good at it, but like if I see something funny, like when I was in where was I? Was it Prague? I think it was Prague. They had a beer spa. Have you seen that? Where you can soak in beer and drink beer at the same time?
No.
I was in Prague, so it's a hot tub. It's basically a spa.
Hot beer.
It's hot beer. So you soak in beer and drink beer at the same time. So they have you in a hot tub with beer on tap at the same time. It's just a novelty thing. So I did a TikTok of that, me drinking a beer, pouring beer while I'm in a hot tub of beer. So that was stupid. So if I see stupid stuff like that, like the noodle eating contest I put on TikTok and the crossing, you know, the Shibuya crossing, which is the busiest intersection in the world. I put that on you know, time lapse and put that up there. So
you're the first person to do that.
Yeah, I know. I know it was totally inventive. Like I was like totally like the first. And then I went to the guy, the teppanyaki, where they cook the steak and everything on the grill right in front of you. I put that on time lapse, and then because nobody's done that either.
No.
So, you know, it took 45 minutes. It's in, you know, a minute and a half of him chopping steak and vegetables and stuff. And so I put that up there, but I'm not good at it.
So still you haven't done a lot of Africa at all? Or?
Only Djibouti, Ethiopia, Djibouti, South Africa, and Egypt.
Okay. Well, that's more than... Morocco's on my list too.
Morocco's on my list. Like I said, I pretty much want to go anywhere in the world.
Sure.
But Morocco, I haven't been to Milan, but I'm not sure I can go back to Italy because I think I have warrants for traffic tickets in Italy. I'm not sure. My car got towed. I got a registered mail from the Vatican, but I'd already paid 3 traffic tickets in Italy.
And you drove around Rome?
I drove around.
That's insane.
I grew up here. Are you kidding?
I
was cutting off buses in Rome.
These streets weren't laid out in, you know, BC.
Oh, I was in a smart car. I was having the best time. I called it the clown car. I'm driving one of those tiny little Fiats that look like a triangle. I'm driving that. Yeah, I was cutting off buses in Rome. In its stick shift, I was having the best time. I'm like, you don't get in front of me. You don't know who I am.
You got tickets?
Apparently, I've already paid 3. My car got towed. It was hilarious. That was a hilarious story too. They towed the car in Italy. That was like my nightmare. I don't want to get towed. Apparently, I have found out the word for Friday. So, because where I was parking, I was staying in a medieval village in Tuscany, and we were parking there all week. And they knew we were Americans and that we didn't live there. Somebody should have said, by the way, on Friday, we have a whole street fair here. We will tow your car. You may not want to park there. No one mentioned that.
No.
So we came out.
Why would they?
They came out and I went into the cafe. That's a bar. It's a cafe in the morning. It's a bar at night at this place. And she's like, call this number. And I called the number and they're like, and the police guy comes over. He goes, sit down. I'm like, sit down. He goes, they're going to come get you. And I'm like, they're going to come get me? What? I'm like, this isn't how it works. He's just sit down. And I'm like, you're not a lot of English. Sit down. I'm like, okay. And I'm like, so they came and picked us up, took us to the wrecking yard. That's what they call
it. The pound.
Yes. they offered us espresso while I got our car, and I paid the fines.
As you do.
And I paid the fines at the post office for the ticket for being towed. And then I paid another ticket that they sent me in the mail. I paid another ticket that they sent me on. Now they're still sending me tickets. I'm like, how many tickets did I get here? So
as long as you keep paying, they'll keep
I'm
sending.
Ignoring them now, but I got a registered letter from the Vatican. It went to my old house with my husband, and he sent me a copy. He goes, does the Pope want an audience? Like, it said from the Vatican, and I was like, okay.
You're banned from the Vatican. You can live.
I'm not sure I can go to Italy anymore. It's a good thing I've been there a lot. But I'd like to go to Milan.
Milan's great.
I'd like to go to Austria, and then I told you, like, Denmark, Norway. Yeah. Been up that way. I haven't been to Greenland, been in Iceland, which was amazing.
I'm meeting the ship in Reykjavik.
The first ship
I'm doing. So it's going from Iceland to Southampton.
Have you been to Iceland?
No,
the whole country looks green screen to me. It was amazing, absolutely amazing. I'll show you after the show. The most amazing thing at the glacier, a big hunk of glacier fell off the night before we went out in the lagoon and the little boats, you know, and everything. Mm-hmm. And really compressed ice turns like cobalt blue because all the light has been extracted from it. And then because of the volcano, half of it is black. So this huge, I mean, it's the size of a 5-story building had fallen off this glacier, and half of it right down the middle was cobalt blue and the other half is pitch black. It looks fake and it was real. And I was just like, I mean, it was just a spectacular moment in there, but it's a gorgeous, absolutely gorgeous. And the hiking there, there's a hike you can do that water, like I saw like something like 64 waterfalls on this hike. Like, I mean, not like here's a trickle of water, like waterfalls, like, oh, okay. That's like, you know, 5 stories high waterfall. So
yeah, I can't wait. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, no, that was beautiful.
Okay, but what do you think all this travel that you've done and all the places you've gone, how has it changed you as a person, and what have you learned about people and the world in general? How has it changed
you? This is a good question. I think everybody should travel because I think it gives you more understanding of, one, the world, one, how alike we are, one, and two, how unimportant we are.
Like, it's humbling.
It is humbling.
A billion Chinese don't care about your problems.
No, it is humbling. It's also mind expanding. I mean, I was in a tiny village in Ethiopia where people live their entire life with a cow in a tent, and they beat up palm leaves to make bread and also alcohol. They do everything from the palm leaves from this succa plant and the cows and their thing. And these people are happy. They are completely happy and they have nothing. And they're completely happy. They live in this little village of, you know, 40 people and they're so happy. And then I come back here and I'm like, Starbucks got my name wrong.
Yeah.
You know,
how dare you?
It really gives you perspective and, like, one, how unimportant and how vast the world is and also how small the world is. I mean, I really think it's hard to hate and if you actually have seen some of the world sort of thing. I think it should be required for everybody. Yeah. Like if you don't ever leave your town, then you have a really small opinion of like what the world is. So,
even in America, I've always said, cause I lived in New York, I'm from Chicago. I lived in New York as well. And I think every like
two American, of my favorite cities.
Yeah, I think every American kid should at least live in New York for a year, almost like the Peace Corps.
Yeah, I love New York actually
because it's the closest thing to a worldwide city we have in the country, and also just to teach you to take public transportation, and you know, because it forces you to go up against people who are different.
Yeah,
and you can't be sheltered there. I mean, the second you step on the sidewalk, it's five different languages going around you and all this other stuff. And you realize, you know, a lot will hate it, but a lot will change their perspective on everything. You know?
It does change your perspective on everything.
You grew up in a car culture, you know.
I grew up in total car culture. The first time I did a subway, I was like, okay, I'm not a dumb person. I can figure this out.
Yeah.
People who are, I mean, it's very, very snotty of me. I'm like, people who are less smart than me do this every day, Laura. You can figure this out.
Yeah.
And I say that to myself a lot on things when I start to get like, I don't know how to do this. Like, I'm trying to find how to take a train. And I was in Italy by myself on Lollapalooza. And I'm like, okay, I have to take the train from Rome to someplace. And I'm like, I can do this. I can do this. I'm like, you know, people every day that do this, farmers do this. You can do this. You can do this. Not that farmers aren't smart. They can be brilliant. They know things I don't.
Yeah.
But I was like, people every day do this. You can do this, Laura. And then, you know, I tell everybody there's nothing that time and a credit card can't solve. So if you have a problem, like my car got towed in Italy, a credit card and time, just have a good attitude, a credit card and some time, you can figure out these problems.
What was Anthony Bourdain's motto? Just like, you know, get a beer, go sit in the corner, and eventually things will go work itself out.
I have met the most amazing people traveling the world. I have friends literally, I'm sure as you do, all over the world now because of, actually when I was in Osaka, I had drinks with a guy who I met in Paris. I met this guy in Paris that he's a comic. He works on cruise ships. I met him in Paris at a show. He was living in Spain, but he's from Australia, and he was doing a cruise ship in Japan. And he's like, I'll be in Osaka. So we met for a drink in Osaka, but I had met
Simon Palomares?
Yes. Do you know him?
Yeah. Oh. He's done the show.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's so funny. When you said he was living in Spain, I go, yeah, I know Simon.
Yeah, we had a drink. We had a drink in a little tiny bar in Osaka.
That's great.
With Mr. What's the guy from Karate King?
Mr. Miyagi?
Yeah, that's what this bartender. He's 78 years old. It's his own bar. He used to be a ski instructor at Mount Fuji, and he's now owns a bar in Osaka.
I like it.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so funny. Well, small world.
I met him in Paris doing a show.
Oh, that's great. I met him in Melbourne. I got off a ship, and I was working with an Australian piano player.
Okay.
And she said, I'm meeting my friend for... I stayed a few extra days. I was like, oh, we're meeting for dinner tonight. He's a comic. You should meet him. And so we had dinner in Chinatown in Melbourne.
Oh, nice.
And then I interviewed him during the pandemic on Zoom.
All right.
Because, you know, it was interesting to get a perspective of how each country was locked down differently. And, you know, I think he had got a van and a dog, and he was traveling around like Australia and things. And yeah, we've never worked together, but I hope to.
He's a nice guy.
Yeah. That's so funny that you saw him and that I picked him out of the... That's great.
It was a pretty interesting characteristics. He's Australian that lived in Spain, who's cruise ships. Yeah, we met him in Paris. I've seen him in LA once. He was here for something. I don't know why. And then he texts me and he goes, I see you're in Osaka. He goes, I'm there tonight. I'm like, okay. So we met for a drink.
Yeah, when it was, you know, very Spanish name, and then it's like, and then he speaks, and he's, oh, you're just an Aussie, you know, Simone? No, Simon. Okay.
I went to Australia when I was 19, and I used to think Australians could drink the most. I haven't been to Russia, and then I've spent some quality time in Scotland, and now I'm like, the Scots will totally beat up the Aussies. They have nice weather, but I have not been to Russia. I suspect the Russians will kill everybody.
That's another Bourdain quote. It's like, I don't care where you think you're from, every Russian can drink you under the table.
Yeah.
And I don't doubt it. I don't doubt it.
I think the Scots will go down trying, but
it'll be a fight, but it's hardcore. But thanks for doing this.
Oh, well, thank you.
And I hope to do your show one day.
Yeah, you're welcome anytime.
Great. Well, you
March
know where
26th
I am.
Is the next one, and then April 23rd, do that one.
Okay, April 23rd, I'll be in
Japan.
Japan.
All right, do the next one.
And I'll get your recommendations after this.
Sometime in May.
Okay, totally. Thank you for doing this.
Oh, thank you. It was super fun.
Okay, it's Laura Hayden, everybody.
Yay, me.
Yay.